I'd like to invite you all to come in, take our seats. If we could have someone close the back door for us, please. Thank you. Welcome to session 161, Free Speech 101, the Utah Valley Uproar Over Michael Moore. Our presenter this afternoon is Joseph Vogel, former student body vice president, UVSC, currently a graduate student and adjunct instructor at BYU. Also author of five books, including Free Speech 101, Utah Valley Uproar Over Michael Moore. For those of you interested, we have copies available right after the session. You head out to the Harvest Room, do not pass go, but take $200 with you to the bookseller's room. We have copies. Joe will be in there. He'll be willing to sign as many as you buy at that time afterwards. I need to remind everybody to turn off cell phones, pagers, other noisemaker devices. If you haven't done so at this time, please set it to stun or something comparable to remind you. If you're like me, you forget to look at it at this point. It's kind of like the buzzers on your dashboard that remind you to put your seatbelt on. You just forget about it. So take a second, look at your cell phone. Please make sure it's in a silent mode. With that in mind, we are going to turn the time over to Joseph for his presentation. After he's done, we will open up the microphone for Q&A from the audience. At that point, we'll ask you to come up and ask your questions into the microphone so we have those on tape, and Joseph will respond as appropriate. So we'll go ahead and turn the time over to you, Joseph.
Thank you all for coming. We're going to start out and show a brief clip, about a 5-minute clip from the movie This Divided State. So if we can get that.
We put the petition on the back of our court. And I imagine that I'll just die down. And I really don't believe there's support in the student body to take it out of office. Nonetheless, I have been in contact with these guys. They have been taking the petition signatures. I think I'm encouraging them to get those petition signatures turned in before I come on time.
To publicly ask the Joe Moreno to basically step down as student government leader. I'd like to run for vice president simply because I'd like to overlook the student senators. This is pretty crazy. I've been getting about 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. It's difficult to pursue this type of endeavor, and yeah, it's not always easy to stand up for what's right.
You know, people have said that, you know, we're going to come after you, we're going to make your life hell for the next one. As much as they want to paint me as an extremist, it's not the case.
Imagine what it's like if you live in Utah. And you have to take care of it. You can help
me. They feel that they have a right to bring their hatred and their filth here. They perceive him as evil, right?
And so it's kind of like a missionary thing we're doing.
I think we have a right to fight as hard as we can to keep it out. And so they think that we are making a conscious effort to bring evil into our valley, like contaminating in that way.
You know, giving our witness to others and then leaving the evil.
People say that you have betrayed your religion, your country, your family, all these things, and I really don't feel that way. I feel like it's because of my heritage and because of my mission experience and things like that I made this decision.
Religion is definitely a big factor in any community. Look at the Middle East, for instance. I'm going to compare Utah to the Middle East. The Islamic religion, everything that they do plays into the Islamic religion. It doesn't matter if it's economics, or biology, or anything to do with the community that plays a role in the community is affected by religion. And I think that's very much so the truth here in Utah.
My wife said the other day, Jim, are you going to wear a bulletproof vest? And I had a Sean Michael Moore, and I said, no, I'm not going to wear a bulletproof vest. She said, no, I want you to.
it's very numbing to see these types of emails come through where people not only attack you personally, but may threaten you.
Yes, I'm right. We're not going to go home and have a brick going through my window. You know, I was worried that something like that would happen, or that the burning cross. I know, I just didn't know.
I received a letter yesterday. It was quite.
Hey,
man. Yeah, hey, man. If he signed it as Good Mormon from Colorado, that was how it fit us. I should be hard, feathered, and run out of the state anyway. I don't think it was so to us, it's the best place in the world. And we don't want it destroyed. We don't want it changed. We don't want Utah County to become like the rest of the world. It's a place where
we've been there.
Yeah, it's a safe haven, if you will. A place where I can raise my children away from the world. I don't want the world in Utah County. We can go visit.
There you have it. yeah, it was quite an experience. I've, in interviews the last week or so, people ask me, you know, did you expect that kind of reaction? You know, you must have known if you brought Michael Moore to Utah County that it would happen. Of course, we knew that bringing Michael Moore to Utah Valley would stir a controversy, but the type of intense reaction that you saw a little bit in that clip and that I'll talk about a little bit more today went beyond anything that I would have expected, especially for a community that I grew up in, a community that's home to two colleges that you would expect is would be an educated, open-minded place. The type of I don't know, fanaticism that we experienced, the uproar was just, it was unbelievable. It reminded me of McCarthyism or something. I mean, we were just being bombarded, thousands of emails and phone calls and you know, threats and why? And that's the question. And that's the question that I want to pose today and that I pose in my book. What does this reveal about Mormon culture and practice, particularly in Utah? I want to briefly tell the story for those. I'm sure some of you followed it in the news, but I guess I'll just try to kind of provide a behind-the-scenes account of what happened. I got an email from our student body president, Jim Bassey, asking he would just forward emails to me about speakers, potential speakers. This one announced Michael Moore, his Slacker Uprising Tour was what it was called. And basically the point was to get young people to vote. It was right before the national elections. His film Fahrenheit 9/11 was still really hot at the time. It had just come out. And the purpose of his tour was just to, you know, to get young people active and excited and hopefully to make an educated vote. We talked it over. We thought it would be a great opportunity. We knew it would probably stir some controversy, but we thought it would be good for the school and for the community. And so we extended the invitation, and we kind of thought it was a long shot because most of the states that he was hitting were swing states, you know, that actually had a part. He was trying to influence the elections. So we just kind of sent it off to him, A week or two later, I heard back from his publicist, and she, after working through some things, found a time that might work, and then she finally called me back and said, if you want him, you've got him, and my heart sank. I was like, what have I done? So it kind of set in within, I guess, a few hours. It kind of spread around campus a little bit, so some people knew that it was at least potentially going to happen. The college newspaper broke the story, and usually the college news doesn't go too far, but the Monday that that newspaper came out, when I came into my office, we were flooded with, I mean, the office was in a frenzy. My personal office, there were like notes jammed under the door, like my phone was going crazy with messages. I saw like Fox 13 and KSL and all these people, and I was just thinking, oh no. It was just, at first I was just overwhelmed, but as the day went on and I started to get phone calls, I started to realize that this had really hit a nerve and something that I didn't really expect. There were a lot of phone calls that first day that, you know, that you heard Jim and I talking in there. One said that I should be tarred, feathered, and run out of the state. We had phone calls, people saying that they were going to come after us, that they were going to make our next month a living hell. One email said that they were planning to, this came I think a couple days later, but said that they were planning to block the freeway to create a traffic gridiron so that people that were trying to come from Salt Lake wouldn't be able to come to the speech. So it was just, it was incredible. And then the other thing that was really sad was that a lot of people were threatening to pull donations to the college, and state legislators were putting pressure on our administration to cancel. So all of this just came within, you know, a week or two of that announcement. I was 23 at the time, and it was quite an experience. It was definitely an education. I want to talk a little bit about some of what happened as far as the donors and the legislators were concerned. One interesting aspect of this whole controversy is that they were basically trying to control the college as a state college, and a lot of donors and legislators made it clear to us that they expected UVSC to be what they called a sister school to BYU, with like a similar mission, similar goals. And what they were concerned about was that by inviting Michael Moore, we would become more like the University of Utah. We'd be a more liberal school. And this was very concerning to them. So they expressed this, you know, at the beginning. What a lot of people didn't know is this really was close a lot of times to not happening, even though it went public quickly. We held the contract for about 2 or 3 weeks. Administration wouldn't let us send it. And they were trying desperately to find ways to cancel it. And in one particular meeting, they arranged this was after we had voted on it as a student council like 2 or 3 times already, but they arranged 2 wealthy donors to meet with us in a kind of secret meeting. In this meeting, they kind of laid out a picture for us of the damage that we were doing to our school. They referred to us as children. They basically said, you know, you guys have created a mess, but you're just kids, you don't know what you're doing. And it's okay, you know, we're gonna make everything better. And basically what they did in that meeting was shocking. They offered us $40,000 to cancel the speech. Basically, that was Michael Moore's speaking fee. And so they just said, we'll take care of it. We'll pay the $40,000, just cancel it. And then we get our donors back and we get the community support back. Fortunately, our student council, I was kind of, as they were presenting this, I was kind of counting the student council members and seeing, you know, did we have enough votes to make it happen? Because our, you know, a lot of people in the press talked about that our council had a quote liberal agenda, but I would say our council was predominantly conservative, so I was a little bit concerned how they would vote. But to their credit, they saw the larger principle at stake, and the vote was 17-3 in favor of continuing. And it was a moment for me as a student to see fellow students stand up that way to multimillionaires who were trying to intimidate us, who were trying to bribe us. It was a really great moment. Now, I want to, for this particular speech, I want to kind of discuss the controversy in relation to Mormonism or in relation to Mormon culture. That was a kind of an interesting component to this whole debate. A lot of people that contacted me referred to it as a debate of good versus evil. That's what was at stake. And they felt an obligation to prevent Michael Moore from coming. You heard in the film, you heard Kay Anderson say, I don't want the world in Utah Valley. And that was, you know, that was a pretty prevalent mindset. And it really made me think about why that was so consistently what we were hearing is we don't want whatever it is that Michael Moore represents. And it took me a while to figure that out because I'd seen his films and I thought, well, he's against the war, he's against violence, he's against guns, he's against corporations. I was trying to think, like, what is he hitting at that's really bothering Mormons in particular? And so an interesting, I guess, conclusion that I came to is that there was this kind of affiliation, a deep-seated loyalty to the Republican Party and to conservatism. That I guess some members kind of viewed his criticism of President Bush and of the war as, and this was in America at large, but I think Mormons kind of fell in this line of thinking generally, that he was attacking their president, their country, that he wasn't patriotic, that he was unloyal to his country. And that was an interesting, actually, maybe some of you read this article in the Salt Lake Tribune that mentioned the overwhelming support, this was just a few months ago, for the war among Mormons. It was something like 75%. And right now, I just heard on CNN, I think the other day, that the country as a whole, it has like a 40% approval rating of the war. And so that poses an interesting question. And the support for Bush among, President Bush among Mormons seems to still be pretty high too. And so it's interesting, this kind of alliance that we've formed with a specific party. I've heard that, you know, the church, I've heard President Hinckley say several times that we're nonpartisan, that we don't support a specific party, but while that may be the official stance, the unofficial stance, especially in Utah, seems to not really be close to that, and especially in Utah County, where it's consistently over 80% Republican. So that was one part of it that I thought was interesting. And then there's this kind of isolationism. And I wanted to read a part in this book. David Keller is a professor at UVSC. He's the director of the Center for the Study of Ethics. And he made what I thought was an apt analogy. He says, "For some, Utah Valley is analogous to a pristine national park whose integrity must be preserved. Just as development threatens the ecological integrity of wilderness, inviting more to campus threatens the moral integrity of the community." And that goes back to what I was talking about earlier with this concept of keeping the world outside and not being tolerant of diverse views or views that maybe that you perceive as being in contradiction to the predominant faith or culture. Several people during this controversy, because it was, I thought personally that it was more diverse than people. People always have a tendency, I think, to generalize or to say all Mormon. You know, they see some people contacted me and they'd say when they saw Kay Anderson, you know, those Mormons are crazy. You know, and he was the representative of Mormonism. And I said, well, I'm Mormon too. So, you know, that we come in all shades. And I knew a lot of Mormons who were fine with Michael Moore. I knew a lot that really liked Michael Moore. I knew a lot that maybe that didn't like him, but that felt that he should be able to come. And then there were those who, you know, who like Kay Anderson or some of these donors and legislators were very strongly opposed to who he was or what he represented and having him come speak on campus. Another quote that I have in this book is from Joseph Smith. And it says, "If it has been demonstrated that I have been willing to die for a Mormon, I am bold enough to declare before heaven that I am just as ready to die in defending the rights of a Presbyterian, a Baptist, or a good man of any other denomination. For the same principle which would trample upon the rights of the Latter-day Saints would trample upon the rights of the Roman Catholics or of any other denomination." That's really kind of the way that I felt in this matter was considering, and I mentioned this in that video, that it was because of my heritage that kind of helped me make this decision. Mormon history, you know, is filled with intolerance. It's filled with persecution. It's kind of a sad story, the way that these people who were simply following the dictates of their own conscience were being forced to flee their homes, they're being forced to flee from city to city, until finally their prophet was shot and there was a mass exodus to Utah, a place that they wouldn't be bothered anymore, a place where they would be left alone, and they'd be able to worship the way that they wanted to. So I would think that given that history and given the fact that we send missionaries out across the world and expect tolerance and expect an open mind, you know, even though there are a lot of, for those of you who were in here before watching the South Park episode, you know, there are some interesting views about who we are as Mormons. But in spite of that, we expect people to be tolerant of us when we go out into the world and preach the gospel. And we expect them to listen with an open mind. And I thought that we could give that same, courtesy and respect to somebody like Michael Moore, who, in my opinion, I've said this several times because, you know, people act like we're, me and Mike are best friends, you know. You know, he was great when he came, by the way. He was very gracious and very respectful of what we had gone through. I had been talking to his sister throughout the whole thing and kind of filling her in on the craziness. And so he knew what we'd been through, and he was very grateful for what we did to get him there. But as far as his views and as far as his documentaries, I don't agree with all of the things that, all of his conclusions, but I did think that he was asking the right questions. He was asking relevant questions. At that time, not a lot of people had the courage to be as outspoken as he was. Is he always objective? No, definitely not. But I did think that he was really exploring issues that we should be thinking about as Americans and as Mormons, since we're part of America. So there was kind of this interesting kind of isolationism that maybe sprung from the fact that we started in Utah and kind of felt like we had been treated so poorly by the world that we, and maybe even doctrinally a little bit, that they represented, you know, Babylon, and we wanted to kind of maintain our integrity, like David Keller put it, like a pristine national park. What probably a lot of you have heard of, the Great Divide in Utah. And you know, sometimes you think it's getting better and sometimes you think it's getting worse. This was definitely one of those cases where I thought, man, we're not making a lot of progress here. After the Olympics, I was very hopeful. You know, it seemed like that was a great step forward for Utah and for Mormons in particular to embrace diversity. And then this Michael Moore incident happens and you realize, okay, that we haven't necessarily learned how to accept different views than our own. And that was unfortunate. There was a girl who came, actually, I think it was 2 or 3 days after the news broke. She came into our student government offices and she was crying because she felt so judged, because she was thrilled that Michael Moore was coming, and she was being, you know, called all kinds of names for holding that view. And then, you know, she didn't look like the typical, I guess, what people would expect to see in this valley or in Utah Valley. You know, she had tattoos and, you know, she didn't maybe dress the way that we would, you know, expect. And because of that, she said, I told her, you know, I said, not all people are the way that, you know, she was describing the way people treated her. I said, I promise you, not all people here are that way. There are a lot of good people here. And she said, you know, you're probably right, but enough are that way that I don't want to live here anymore. And I'm going to transfer out of state next semester. And I just thought, that's so sad, you know, that's so sad that, and I'm sure there are many other examples like that. And I know there are probably a lot of examples of people here that are good and inclusive as well, but it's just sad that we still have so much of that. And I would hope that that as Mormons, as Utahns, that we would be more inclusive and that we would allow and actually embrace diversity, that we wouldn't just tolerate people, but that we would try to learn from them. I ended up minoring in religious studies at UVSC, and it was an amazing thing for me to learn about different religions and different cultures and respect the kind of goodness and traditions that come out of those religions. And just to recognize where we are in respect to that, especially as Mormonism turns into a global religion, where more members are outside of the United States than in now, we really, I think, need to think about how we're going to become an inclusive religion. How, you know, in a pluralistic society, when we have all these different religions and cultures and races, and we're spread out all across the world, how are we going to maintain what makes us unique as a religion, but at the same time be inclusive and work with people of other faiths and backgrounds? And that was something that I thought from this controversy that was a big question. I want to leave some time for questions, so I'm just going to go a little bit longer, and then I hope that you all have some questions that we can talk about. I guess so. One of the questions people ask me, you know, being LDS and maybe not being, I guess, mainstream or orthodox or traditional, at least in Utah Valley, how to reconcile that, I guess, or like they're kind of shocked. I've noticed in the interviews I've done this past week, like, you're going to BYU, you know, it's like, why would you do that? And I've even, Ann Moore, Michael Moore's sister, actually asked me, are you gonna, you know, get out of Utah? Are you gonna get out of there? Those people are, you know, crazy, you know? And, you know, it's an interesting question, but I just feel like I would stay in the church, I would stay at I would go to BYU, and I would stay in Utah for the same reason that I would remain an American. I love my country, I love this state, I love my church. I think BYU is a great institution. And I think that there are a lot of things that need to change in all of those. I think we have a lot of work to do. But I don't think we can make those changes by running away. And what I hope to do is to try to make a difference. I've said, you know, I'm not gonna go to BYU and try to, you know, just be this rebel without a cause and you know, stir up controversy just for the sake of controversy. But I do feel like we should be able to speak our conscience, that we should speak up on issues that we're passionate about, even if it goes against the status quo. There are a lot of issues, you know, that are at stake, and there are a lot of things about BYU and you know, about even the church that I've questioned, and that I think it's healthy to question. And I think the questions, as we learned from Joseph Smith, sometimes bring remarkable things. So, thank you, and then I'll answer questions. Thank you.
Yeah, just please come on, line up here at the mic. Go ahead.
I have to do a couple of preparatory thoughts before I really get to the question, because a number of years ago, I moved to New York to work for a publishing company, a Simon & Schuster label. was brand new employee, introduced at a meeting to the president of the company as, this is so-and-so from Utah. The man took my hand and said, how can you stand to be from a state where Orrin Hatch is your senator? He didn't say anything else to me other than, how can you stand to be from a state where Orrin Hatch is your senator? At another meeting shortly thereafter, I was introduced as a Mormon from Utah, and I was immediately, how can you stand to belong to a religion where so much hate and so much evil is perpetrated upon the American society? I mean, I'm standing there with my jaw dropped and had a very difficult time. Well, I defended everything, you know, but excuse me, the episode you're talking about truly embarrassed me. Truly embarrassed me because it was civil war. It was not right or wrong, it was civil war, because there were Mormons on both sides of the issue and the conflagration was between, we can't do that and intend to prepare or repair a national image where we are constantly adding to the negativity. So my point is, I believe an opinion that as we move forward, somehow, and it was reflected there, how do we get Latter-day Saints to be in the world, but not of the world, but still recognize that the world has a right to be in Utah? And so, you know, it becomes a very, very interesting thing to move around.
Well, yeah, just the question that he poses, I, you know, of course, don't have a simple answer to, because there's not a simple answer. But yeah, I definitely think that that was an interesting thing for me, just to see that there was quite a bit of warfare, as you say, going on between Mormons, and a lot of people maybe didn't, they thought it was a, you know, maybe a party thing or a Mormon versus non-Mormon thing. But I agree with you. I didn't think that was the case.
I'm not from Utah County, so I don't know what the whole big deal was about. But I have two questions. Number one, why specifically, now we know the result, but why specifically did you invite him? What did you hope would happen? And what specifically did the other side have against him? So specifically, what are the issues that were involved that caused you to invite him and the other side to reject him, basically? I'd like to know just what the issues were.
That's a good question. What we hope to do as a student government was just to create some degree of excitement and some degree of dialogue. On our campus, it seemed like there was so much apathy that we wanted to shake that. Most of our speakers, we'd have like 20 or 30 students. We had 8,000 for Michael Moore, but it wasn't just his speech. It was everything that led up to it. The thing that I've said consistently that I was most pleased about that came from all of this was the fact that our campus was a college campus. There was dialogue, there were panel discussions, there were debates, there were protests. There was the highest student voter registration we've ever had that semester. And so that was kind of what we hoped to get out of it. And then part two of your question, what people were against. Well, the big red herring was money. You know, it was his speaking fee that everyone was so outraged about, I don't think that was the real issue. We made back most of the money off of ticket sales, and we've had the same speaker budget for 10 years, and it never seemed to matter until Michael Moore came. So I never thought it was about money, but a lot of people used that. I don't know, the best answer I could give is that they weren't worried about what he would say specifically, but as much as what he represented. And like I said, it was kind of hard for me to understand that. I know a lot of people that were against it had never seen anything that any of his films or read any of his books. So maybe it was kind of vague in their mind. He was, you know, people referred to him as like Satan or Hitler, or, you know, so obviously I don't think that it was like, we're mad at Michael Moore because he's, you know, doesn't like guns or whatever. I think it was that he represented some like abstract concept of evil, and they were trying to block that.
I want to give you some food for thought, and everybody here also. I've done this in the last past couple meetings. If somebody's heard me, excuse me for repeating it. But when people say, well, why are LDS so ingrained with the Republican Party? You hear things like, well, Bill Maher says we're a cult, we're no better than Scientologists, this and that. It's mostly the Republicans on the right that think we're a cult. You mentioned Bob Jones University. They almost lost their tax-exempt status when they wouldn't take down a thing on their website that said Mormons and Catholics are a dangerous cult. They're the secret combination that Revelations warns about. That ought to be brought out when you go to BYU. Mention the fact Orrin Hatch, biggest recipient of tobacco money. Maybe that's no big deal, but we claim to be so high and mighty and so pure and so moralistic. Hatch takes more tobacco and alcohol money than anybody in Congress, as much as Jesse Helms did.
Yeah.
We could go on. Senator Reid trying to block Yucca Mountain. We blocked the MX missile against Reagan. That was when we were nonpartisan 25 years ago. Senator Reid is trying to keep nuclear waste out of Yucca Mountain. The church was supposed to back him and read something to Nevada and Utah congregations. A week before it was supposed to be read, mysteriously it disappeared.
Yeah.
And did Orrin Hatch pressure President Hinckley to withdraw that? I mean, why are we reading proclamations on the family, but we're not reading stuff on nuclear waste and other things that the other side wants represented? Right. So my point is, can we dwell on some people? We should go by individual issues and not parties.
Right.
Because there's a lot of things that Democrats are wrong on too, and I've been public on that also.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point you bring up. And that's an interesting, you know, this kind of aligning the church with Republicans or with conservatism is kind of interesting, because it seems like to me at least that the major two issues that make it that way are abortion and gay marriage. And none of the other issues matter, it seems like. That's it, you know, and then there's this kind of aligning with evangelical Christians, which I don't know if that's the direction that the LDS Church wants to go in, but it doesn't seem to be consistent. Like you said, there's so many issues at stake that it's kind of unfortunate that just because of those two issues, we give up everything else.
Yeah, I followed this thing right from the start, and I thought it was interesting with the fervor that and the fired reaction that actually occurred with it. I'd heard Mr. Moore in Denver previous to that, just maybe a couple of months. He gave a different speech, and of course in Denver it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, he can come and go as he wants to in some cities and not hardly be noticed. But in Utah County, I think it's different. But I think, you know, as I look back, I think there's a little bit more to the picture than what is actually, what we actually saw in Utah County. And that's that the liberals and the Democrats nationwide were rebounding from what they figured was a bad election in Florida. Okay, they thought that they had a bad deal. They thought that they got a stolen election. Michael Moore was kind of the standard bearer on that whole, he was kind of the voice on the liberal side for that whole election process, saying, well, you know, it should have been Gore kind of thing. And then, of course, supporting Kerry all along the campaign trail. In fact, he even traveled with him at times. So I can understand, you know, that maybe the liberals wanted to be a presence in Utah County and let people know, well, we are here, you know, and that we want to be represented. The conservatives on the other side, you know, need to counter with Sean Hannity or somebody to counter that voice. And I understand that Ann Coulter, if you know that, is probably coming to UBSC around November, I hear. There's a rumor mill. Now, I think that she's pretty caustic in her own way, and I think she'll just come and go quietly. I don't know that anything's going to happen. Of course, she's had threats, too. But anyway, I just think that there's much more to the picture, and I'd like to just, you know, that's what I'd like to present, is the fact that, you know, the liberals did want to have a voice. They wanted to let people know they are a presence in Utah County. And I think that was much of why it turned out the way it did.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because probably another encouraging part of this to me was so many minorities of all kinds kind of surfaced in this controversy and felt like they were finally being represented, that they were finally being acknowledged. And it was kind of it became a kind of symbolic thing for them. And they, you know, they came in droves and they to the actual speech and from all over the state. And it was like they were so excited that there were other people like them here, you know, and that they had a voice, you know, and that they had a speaker that maybe represented their perspective, as opposed to, you know, getting Orrin Hatch come to campus for the 23rd time. Not that there's anything wrong with Orrin Hatch.
Love the movie. Loved your presentation.
Thank you.
I bought multiple copies of the movie and handed it out to people. I've considered myself an Orthodox member of the church my entire life. I'm still Orthodox, plan on staying that way. But when I saw the movie for the first time, I felt like I wasn't Mormon. I was born and raised in California, lived there my whole life. I've never felt like that wasn't my people until I saw the movie. You know what I'm saying? So to what extent do you think the image of Mormons as neocon Republicans who are married to Bush is simply a Utah thing? And I mean, I know it's still around, but to a lesser extent in other states. But obviously, if you're not in the United States, you're not a Republican, okay? And then we know that members of the church in Europe lean to the left instead of leaning to the right. So, I mean, to what extent do you think it's specifically a Utah problem? Or at the beginning, you mentioned it being a, is it a problem with Mormonism or Mormon culture?
Right.
And then if it's Mormon culture, is it just Utah Mormon right. culture?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I grew up in California as well, and I do think that it's probably more intense in Utah, and particularly in Utah County. But that being said, you know, most of the leadership in the church still comes from this region, and the way things are in Utah kind of has a large influence on the rest of the church wherever it is. I served my LDS mission in Micronesia, and they actually, the mission president said that they couldn't sing hymns in their own language, that English was the language of the restored gospel. And I just say that to kind of show that sometimes the Utah way is the Mormon way, you know, across the world. I don't think it's quite as strong, you know, outside of Utah. It's definitely probably heightened here, but you know, their influence is outside of the state.
I was one of the recipients of Chuck's extra copies, so I also got to view it. I enjoyed it, not from a perspective of seeing what happened. Obviously, it was really actually pretty disappointing to be a Latter-day Saint watching that going on in Utah. It made me sick to my stomach to know that there were members of the church. I find myself in a dilemma. I go to church and I say, gosh, they're so conservative. Can't everybody just move a little? And then I go to Sunstone and I'm like, gosh, they're so liberal. Can we just... And it's really difficult to try to... I just want nice, open-minded people that are... I like the nice image of being a Latter-day Saint. I'm a convert. So I really like that we're seen as really nice people. That video destroyed a lot of that. My biggest concern was, as I watched the video, I critically analyzed everything that Michael Moore said. I was just really excited. I mean, he gave a very positive message, I'm against all that, we need to stop killing people and all that. That was wonderful. Pull out of there, stop fighting, let's concentrate on some of the other issues that are going on in our country. But right at the end, there was a dissonance that happened between you and the other gentleman in the film, and I was disconcerted to see, could you say a little more to what happened in that last 10 minutes of the film? And I know I was like rooting for you guys to like see each other again, and then you watch the screening and the movie together, and that, but what happened in that? Did you have to deal with something in your life that I guess maybe you had to make a decision that we didn't get to see on the film? I guess all of a sudden it was like you were the bad guy at the end of the film, and so I guess I've been left wondering that yeah. whole time what happened there.
Yeah, a lot of people that have seen the film have that question. That's a good question. Jim Bassey, who's the student body president, we were good friends. We had fought together, you know, going all the way through this controversy, and I have a lot of respect for him. Unfortunately, at the very end, I started writing this book, and he was very supportive. Like, he was really excited. Student government was really excited. But the word got to the press, and I did a couple of interviews with the press about it. And the very next day, when I came to school, We were notified, or I was notified, that Sean Hannity's people had called and threatened to sue me if I had even mentioned his name in the book. Donors and legislators called the school and said, you know, what's going on? Things have just calmed down. You got to get control over this student. You can't let him, you know, get away with this. And it really kind of made people upset. They felt like, you know, the things that they did, which were unethical, were going to be, you know, exposed. Or and then the other thing was that Kay Anderson filed a lawsuit against the school, and there was some concern that because of my book, I was putting that lawsuit in jeopardy, which I never understood. And as it turned out, Kay Anderson withdrew his lawsuit because of my resignation, and they were like on the same, like within a day. And so that was really interesting and really kind of sad for me, of course, personally, because of the friendships and things that were involved, but also as a principal, because free speech won with Michael Moore. And then I thought, okay, and then I write a book, and suddenly the principal, you know, is thrown away. But specifically with Jim and I are good friends still, and he actually apologized, wrote me a letter and apologized for what happened. He was under a lot of pressure at the time, and I understand that. A lot of people were breathing down his neck, and, you know, I disagree with what he did at that time, but at the same time, we are friends. I gave him a copy of this book, and, you know, I talked to him, and we play basketball together, so.
I come from one of the most liberal areas in the United States, right by Los Angeles, and I can say that it is not just a Utah problem, because I walk into my ward and very often it feels like I've entered Orem in a building. You know, there's probably a dozen liberals in the ward, and every time I meet a new one, it feels like, oh, you've joined the secret society, you know? and like there's this sort of haze of fear about talking, you know, and bringing up political issues, because we feel like such the little dog. I even had a seminary teacher tell me when I was in high school that the Democratic Party was an instrument of Satan. So, I mean, this is going on all over the place. What I want to know, what your opinion is on what, I think the cure to this is political discourse. I mean, we say don't talk about politics at church, but what's going to cure this? People need to be able to talk, right? And no one wants to talk, or they're afraid of either hurting someone's feelings or being hurt. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on how to sort of bring this out? I mean, what?
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
If I could get everyone a Sun student,
there's
be great.
The plug. Yeah, no, yeah. I, you know, that's sad to hear, but I think I tend to agree with that, and it's unfortunate. I think there's kind of an atmosphere of fear, you know, that you're scared if you say something in Sunday school or institute. That it's just not even appropriate to talk about anything that matters. We just have to kind of skim the surface and you know, smile and go along with it. When I would think that there are, you know, like the secret society that you're talking about. I think there are a lot of people that think differently than the mainstream, but there might be a degree of fear that there will be some type of retribution, like the philosophy professor at BYU who spoke his conscience and was fired, you know. And I think there's, I've felt that fear, you know, as a member, that if you speak out on something that maybe, I don't know, that you feel passionately about, but that maybe isn't within like the orthodoxy, that there's gonna be some type of retribution. So, but I think to answer your question, I think the answer, at least for me, I see it at UVSC, so many members my age leaving the church, and I think the answer is to stay in the church and to be a voice that's different than, you know, what you're hearing, and to be a strong and active voice, and see if you can do that. You know, that's the only way that the church is going to change, I think, is if members stay in, but at the same time remain independent and open-minded and have their own opinions. That's the best I could think.
Well, this guy just stole my question, so I was going to say that I read your book and I really enjoyed it, Joe, so good luck with everything.
Thank you.
I was just thinking, you know, wondering how you think the people that, you know, the donors and the legislators, you know, manage to fit together in their mind, you know, trying to stop one view being shared at a public institution that is a learning institution. I mean, they, you know, they have an obligation at schools, especially public schools and colleges and universities, to, you know, tell both sides, right, and to teach. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do you think? You know, how do you think they did that, or do you think they just didn't think?
Well, yeah, yeah. That, you know, like I said, it's one thing. You see somebody like Kay Anderson on the screen, and you think, okay, he's like, you know, some crazy guy, you know. But when, like you said, like state legislators, you know, people that you would assume would have some degree of education, that would, they would be more open-minded. One senator at the Sean Hannity event said to me, kind of a similar thing to what was said earlier. He said to me point blank, "You can't be a Democrat and a good member of the church." And that's a state senator. And I asked, I actually posed that to those two donors that came to the meeting and offered us $40,000. I said, what would make you guys feel so threatened by one speaker? You know, we've had tons of conservative speakers here. One speaker that you would come in here and offer us $40,000 to cancel. Like, how would you feel so threatened by that? And the way that they responded to me is, we don't feel threatened, but, and we believe in freedom of speech, but we have the freedom to speak with our pocketbooks. And, you know, we don't like the direction that the school's heading. It's our money, we can do what we want with it. And legislators kind of felt similarly. You know, we are in control here, we have the power, we want to see it go a certain direction, and it's going to go that way. And so, and that's kind of a scary thing. And you know, I've been hoping, and I hope in the next few months, that one of the things that this book will do is force those people to come out and explain themselves, you know, that how they could act like that, and how they could hold a state institution by strings like that.
Well, there's not much time. I want to strike a note of optimism, of bipartisan optimism. I recently got married in November to a Republican, something I swore I'd never do growing up. That was one almost as important as Temple Recommend was, had to be politically liberal. But one thing I found, though, in the conversations with many of my friends, is at least the intelligent conservatives are abandoning the extreme partisan and the whole neoconservative movement, non-physically responsible, incompetent, warmongering, just directionless. And I see more and more independence politically, at least in my area of the church, and it's pretty conservative culturally. It's Mesa, Arizona, and I'm hoping that's a trend. I see it in a lot of the blogs that I participate to have political themes. But another point of hope, when I was talking to my wife more and more about her antipathy to conservatives, and maybe this explains the motivation of politicians, it's a tribal thing. A lot of it's based on a kind of knee-jerk reaction, the morality of gay marriage and abortion rights, but also, you know, the eroticizing of culture, that the Republican Party's done a good job of standing against that and making that such a rallying point that people don't see any other issues until it becomes so egregious, which I think it has under Bush. A lot of people are starting to look at other moral issues besides ones that are related to sexual morality. But I would hope that, and maybe you can share me your views on what does it take when you communicate with these people that have the money, don't want the direction, what is the direction they think you're pursuing? And like you said, if Moore is against corporate oppression, if he's against war, if he's against, you know, unrestricted access to firearms, those type of things, what is their beef there? I mean, besides the two issues of abortion and gay marriage, it doesn't seem like they have a deep-seated thing. It's just the lust for simplicity. I think political rhetoric in the Republican Party has made it very simple for someone to think that they have a monopoly on a kind of moral viewpoint, and they just want, they don't want anything to interrupt that simplicity, as Moore certainly would, right, with the questions, if not his answers. And do you think that was driving a lot of the politics? Because some may be educated, but they depend on the votes mostly of middle America that simply is not educated. Only about 20% of the people in this country get college degrees. And because of the tribalism I see in Utah, there's that allegiance to this type of political tribalism.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's kind of, your comments are kind of the way that I'm thinking about it as well. And like I said, it's hard to say. It's hard to say, you know, how much they knew specifically about issues that Michael Moore has addressed and which of those. Like I said before, I think it's more of just that he, I don't know, represents the enemy, and it's kind of a vague. Right, yeah. I mean, I really liked Roger and Me, his earliest one, and I think a lot of Mormons would think that was great, but I think he just represented. It's funny that you mentioned that, because a lot of the emails we got mentioned something about his physical appearance, you know, like that he was fat and he had a beard, like, you know, that was the reason why we shouldn't invite him. So, go ahead.
That's the non-judgmental group of people. First, I'd love to commend you for what you did.
It's
fantastic for sticking up and having the courage to do that.
Thanks a lot.
But I'm curious, what's next? And were you political before all this? And where do you see this taking you in the future? Like, where were you? You've had greatness thrust upon you. Seriously, right? I mean, it's one of those moments where in life you're cruising along and then boom,
yeah.
New direction. So I'm just curious where you're headed and what you were like before.
Thanks. Definitely not into politics. I love to write and influence in that way. I love to be involved. I am a type of person. I was raised by my parents to ask questions and to think for myself. So those things are like I'm definitely always trying to, you know, be involved and understand what's going on in the world around me. Politics specifically tends to really get on my nerves, and it's definitely something that I couldn't get involved in, but I hope to make a difference in other ways. So, thank you.
And one last question: if people are interested in getting a hold of copies of the video, do you have information on how they could do that?
Yeah, somebody just told me Tower Video.
Tower Video.
And it's also on Amazon if you want to buy
Amazon,
it.
And the title is
This Divided State.
This Divided State. Thank you, Joseph.